Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a really good day to be Pat Mahomes. Not a bad day to be Danny Ruye, or myself, I'm Grant, or you. Got air in our lungs, got the sun beating down on us, but it's a better day to be Pat Mahomes. 10 years, $503 million, including incentives. The contract he signed yesterday could end up being worth that. Although his guarantee is a little over $140 million, you comp that to some of the great players in baseball, like Jacob deGrom is worth, you know, $137 million over the next 5 years. Just shows you how different the NFL and the MLB contracts really are, right? I mean, the football player that signs that deal, it looks great, and it's going to be amazing, and that guy's going to get paid so much money. I mean, he already probably never has to worry about working the rest of his life or doing anything else, but you just comp the sports and the deals with the guaranteed money in baseball versus football. Mm-hmm. It's staggering, the difference in those two contract structures.
The ink dries, and it says Grant H. Paulson at the bottom of that contract that Pat Mahomes signed. First purchase. You leave the office, you shake the hands, you pop the Dom Perignon, you high five, you text your spouse or call your parents, whoever, right? Once you're done, first thing you buy.
I'm buying my parents a house, I'm buying my dad a Jag or a boat, whatever he wants, I'm buying my mom a car of some type.
That's not bad.
Taking care of the parents.
That's very thoughtful. I'd do that like third. I'd still do that, but I'd like there'd be something where I'm like, me. My thing. You know what I mean? Like I'm outfitting something. I'm doing one frivolous thing that's only for me.
Maybe you'd buy a life-size statue of Nick Ashew and have it built in your backyard. Let's kick off our Beltway Blitz. Nicholas, are you okay with that? Can you pose as a statue figure in Danny's backyard for an extended period of time?
Just be a statue.
Listen, if he's getting $500 million, we're going to have to work out a nice percentage of that if I'm going to sit there and pose. But sure, everybody has their price.
Yeah, like so whenever I'm
certainly no different.
Yeah, whenever I'm out there, he's just standing still as the statue. He can move around when I'm not there. You know what I mean? But when my kids show up and it's like, look, kids, art. And he has to stand still.
Oh, he's the actual statue, Danny?
He's the statue,
yeah. I was
thinking
he was just posing to have a statue made.
Yeah, he's my full-time statue. In other words, I want to look out that window and see beauty, and I need him to be there. And he, oh, you're looking, and then he stands very poised and handsome.
How many hours a day would I have to do this? That's the only question. I might get tired.
24. But, like, when I'm asleep, you'll probably be able to sleep, too.
I might need like $100 million for that, but we'll see. We can work this out if you get that contract.
Well, I got it.
I just like the idea of Nick's wife asking, like, hey, are you coming home? He's like, no,
nope.
Remember, I'm doing the statue thing. And Danny's
I'm Danny's statue.
Been there for months. He's like, yes, but I have to be here. You don't understand. I'm Danny's statue. Nicholas, no Bradley Beal for the Wizards. When did he hurt his shoulder?
This has been kind of going on for a little while. As they've been working him out, they've been sort of testing out the soreness in the shoulder, and he's apparently not going to need surgery as of right now. It's nothing along those lines. This is more of just a, hey, let's look at the overall situation here. If we were, you know, playing for a 4 or 5 seed, or we were in better position, or we had John Wall back, he'd probably be out there, you know, or also if they weren't in a bubble and the situation wasn't what it was. And I think they just looked at this together and said, you know, this probably isn't going to be something that's necessarily worth it in this time. And it's crazy. I mean, 30 points a game this year, and he wasn't an all-star. He had a chance to maybe make an all-NBA team if he'd played during this. He might not be all-NBA, which is just crazy to think with the season he had.
Nicholas, does anybody want the 8 seed?
I don't think so. So I think they should start letting other teams in, like the Hornets, maybe the Go-Go should go in there and be part of this. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, now Spencer Dinwiddie's going to be out for the Nets. The Nets have a G League team out there, and the Wizards aren't far behind. I mean, the funny thing is, like, if you actually look, though, the Wizards in six games without Bradley Beal this year were 3-3, and they beat Denver, Miami, and Boston. Like, they've won really – they've had, like, surprising wins with Bradley Beal not being out there. So they have that – you know, I mean, you remember this. They had that weird capability of, like, going into games they had no business winning, and they're, like, 8-point dogs, and they go out and they win. And it's just – it's a weird concept. And even without Bertans and Beal, Tom Haberstroh tweeted this out, the Wizards are plus 11 in 479 minutes with both Beal and Bertans out. So, like, they've just found other guys on this roster that can step up and suddenly help them do it. And I think a lot of teams just overlooked them and all of a sudden went, whoa, we have to keep up with them. They're not going to play any defense, but we've got to try and score like them too.
Nick, aside from the very obvious, which is the pandemic and the fact that sports will be back and we've all been hungry for that, why would a Wizards fan be excited or tell them why they should want to watch what they will be watching for when this team plays with so many bodies out now?
Rui Hachimura is going to be like the guy for them. Like, this is an opportunity for them to basically feature him as their number one guy and just give him a chance to not only develop, but, you know, sort of see what he can be moving forward for this team. I mean, he's, when he was healthy this year, he was very good for this team. And you know, it's an opportunity for him. I, look, you're going to see these young guys out there, right, that you're hoping are part of the team's future that may be free agents this year or in the coming years. And it's, okay, how are these guys going to be in terms of bench players for us? They're going to be fun. But this is a chance to really see what Rui can do, and I think fans are going to be pleasantly surprised with how he plays.
Any other kids? I like Jerome Robinson. I see a little Avery Bradley to his game. I want to see Thomas Bryant in a meaningful environment. And I think a lot more load is going to be on Troy Brown as well to do a little half-court playmaking. He was playing well in some spurts. Nick, give me what you're looking forward to.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Troy Brown because he's kind of been the forgotten guy, right? Like, he was the pick that suddenly just quietly disappeared because at times he looked like Otto Porter, and it was a shame. He had these moments where you say, okay, I see why they drafted him. And then there's other moments where you go, what in the world? Like, where is he? But I'm with you. Jerome Robinson, actually, I mean, think about that. That guy was a lottery pick. That was a first-round pick, lottery pick, somebody that was a great shooter in college and really never had the opportunity with the Clippers because they were just so deep. He just wasn't getting the time to actually play much. But if he can find his shot like he had in college in the NBA, he's somebody that has a bright future for the Wizards because he brings something to the table that they don't really have a lot of, and that's guys that can space the floor. And even on just now, he's I think 28, but Shabazz Napier is somebody that I hope has a future with this team too, because he's a solid backup point guard. He's not somebody that has as much upside as Jerome Robinson clearly, but there is certainly something there.
How you feeling big picture about not only NBA, but you know, you see MLS having an issue with one of the teams, Major League Baseball, our return to sports here seem to be in a little bit of jeopardy.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but if you actually look at the overall numbers of, you know, players testing positive and the overall amount of play, the percentages are relatively low. I know baseball's had their issues so far, and they're going to have to get that testing together really quickly, but you look at these numbers where if you're getting these 5% and 5%, 6% and maybe under, you know, positive percentages of players before they get into these situations, as long as you keep things together and you keep this bubble or whatever, you know, depending on the sport, the system really locked down tight, this has the potential to work, but it also has to fall on the players to follow these guidelines and be smart about things to make sure that you don't have any disruptions.
Thank you, Nick. You're very handsome.
I'll see you guys.
See you, buddy. There he goes. Little football, please, Tommy. JP Finley covers the Redskins for NBC Sports Washington. John Paul, you tweeted something. You tweeted a little tiny poll out the other day. It was either yesterday or the day before. Bigger story, name change, or the minority owners wanting to sell. I'm one of the few people that said the minority owners wanting to sell. That, to me, is a groundbreaking, enormous, huge, bigly story. I think that's the bigger deal. Go into why that's so huge.
Well, Danny, I'm with you. I think that's the bigger deal, too. And let's not pretend that changing the name isn't a massive, massive accomplishment or diminishment, depending how you look at it. But that's a huge story. To me, if this was a couple minority partners that owned 8% in the team and wanted to sell, that wouldn't be that big of a deal. But we're talking about 40% stake in the Redskins up for grabs that, depending what you believe, nobody wants to buy. And the story is just so odd. Why right now? You're selling at what would appear to be kind of the bottom of the market with revenue uncertain for 2020 due to COVID. And for years and years and years, there's been some level of corporate pressure to get the name changed. Now it appears they're going to change the name, and still these people want to sell. There's, I mean, I've seen some of it with my own eyes, but there's all sorts of reports that, you know, Dan is personal friends with these guys. So it just, finally changing the name makes a ton of sense. You can understand why it's occurring. Why these guys are selling, I can't figure out.
JP, what am I missing here about the, when you think about the timeline of the name change? People are saying it's going to happen before the start of the season. How would that even be possible?
Grant, I'm actually writing a story right now for NBCSportsWashington.com. I talked to Andrew Brandt, who I'm sure you guys know, is kind of like the foremost sports business law guy. And the way he described it is that it would take a Herculean effort to be ready with a new name by week one. And frankly, I've gotten to a point where I just don't expect it. I think you're looking at Washington this fall. And there's enough outlets already that don't say the Redskins name that it won't even feel that weird. But I don't think there's any chance. People only think about jerseys and maybe new T-shirts. But there's a million other things that have a Redskins logo on there that the team is going to have to turn around. And unless timelines change dramatically, they're playing in 2 months. There's just not enough time to get that done. Not to mention a massive change like this, the forward-facing name of a $3.5 billion empire, you would really want to research that and have it, you know, focus groups and market research and all sorts of stuff. And I think it's not just possible but probable that the Redskins have a, in case of emergency, break glass folder full of, you know, kind of backup plans if they have to change the name. I know that there are some folks there that have been always kind of had this issue in their back pocket if it ever comes up. But that's still nobody planned to have to do this in 2 months. And I just don't think it's possible.
Jake Plummer-Finley, do you think Dan Snyder's going to sell the franchise, or do you think he ends up shedding his mortal coil as the owner of the Redskins?
I don't think he's selling. I'm not ruling it out, because maybe he really doesn't want to change the name and knows that the name has to be changed, and he wants to go down with his principles. I just don't ever see him selling. I could be wrong. I know there's some theories that because of the sale of the 40% that could force him to sell. I've talked to some lawyers. That doesn't sound very plausible either. I just – that guy loves owning this football team, and I think he loves owning the football team more than he loves owning just the Redskins.
I do too. You know, I'd be curious, though, what does he love more, the Redskins or money? Because – you know, I always wonder if Bezos or anybody else came and said, here's your $7 billion, do you still want the team? I have a hard time thinking that he would turn that down. Have you heard any names that you actually like?
Not really. But, Grant, my reply would be, what's that money look like if you get to new stadium and then he's got a Super Bowl on deck? And that isn't that far away now. You know, if he sells it in another 10 years, what's that money look like?
Well, okay, but that's 10 years of potentially being hated by everybody around you and having to potentially take on more stake in the team, which I don't know if financially he can do. I don't know.
I don't know about that. But that's an interesting one, because I don't know that he can buy. If those guys want to sell, wouldn't Dan just want to buy it? I don't know that he can come up with that.
But can he have 100% of the team financially? I don't know if he can do that.
Like from the league or from his personal finances?
No. Meaning from his own finances. Does he have that type of money?
I don't know, but I don't believe so. I don't know that, but I wouldn't think he could. Because if he could, wouldn't you just do it?
I would think so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you would.
Hey, real quick, so you don't love any of the names you've heard. I think a lot of us are in that boat. I mean, if you had to pick something that's been bouncing around, what would you go with?
I like Red Tails. I've kind of made my peace with that. I think it works for the song and HTTR, and the backstory is cool. But it's so hard because my entire life, the Redskins have been a part of it. So I'm not coming into this without bias. That's the name. So to me, to hear anything else just sounds a little bit silly or weird or different. And that's something that me and probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, are just going to have to deal with.
JP, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, fellas. Take care.
Be well, Pud. There's JP Finley. Check him out, NBCSportsWashington.com. You can watch him on NBCSW. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Want to get back into the Redskins this hour, and whether or not if they change the name and the logo, they'll change the colors as well. But next, let's talk about what Major League Baseball has going on right now. A couple of star players came out yesterday and said that they would consider walking away if the sport can't get itself on track here, with teams being able to get tested as they were supposed to, those test results coming back. The Nationals canceled their workout yesterday. They are back on the field today. We'll get into that on The Fan. Mike Rizzo just told reporters that all of the Nationals' July 3rd tests have been processed, all came back negative. That now in the rearview mirror means he's comfortable holding today's workout after canceling yesterday's. So the good news for the Nationals is that all of those tests came back negative. None of their players or staffers had COVID-19. But Danny, they took those tests on the 3rd, and as of the 6th, they hadn't gotten the results, and they were ready to work out. And you understand why Mike Rizzo would say, we're not going to let our players take the field. You told us that we'd have these tests more often than we're getting them. So that's the first problem. And secondly, you told us that we would be able to get those results back within a timely manner, within a day. It's been 3 days. We don't know who has COVID and who doesn't, so we're not going to practice. And it turns out it was just precautionary. Maybe they didn't have to do it that way. But you respect that they didn't. And I don't think the Nationals are going to be the only team to do that in the coming days. The Astros did it yesterday, among other clubs. It's going to be a trend if baseball cannot figure out how to, A, get their testing lab to operate more efficiently and get these tests done more often, and, B, get these results back to the teams way faster.
Yeah, that was embarrassing, quite frankly. Major League and Rob Manfred apparently got angry at Mike Rizzo for saying what he said. Mike Rizzo was dead right, and baseball had months to figure it out. And apparently one of the excuses offered from the Major League Baseball's office was, well, the July 4th holiday. Well, please someone get a calendar to Mr. Manfred, because there are all sorts of big holidays coming up. You know, God forbid you have to deal with Thanksgiving or Labor Day or something else, right, where people may not be working the same way. This should have been what they were working on for months, and it wasn't. They threw it together. They thought certain things would be in place. This is embarrassing. This is a responsibility of bosses, of owners, of management to make sure that the workplace is safe and secure. So Mike Rizzo did what he should do, which is take a step to ensure the safety of the employees of the Washington Nationals, and he canceled that workout. Major League Baseball needs to get its act together ASAP. Otherwise, our dreams even of the 60-game season aren't going to materialize. So I'm glad for a couple things. One, they got the results back. Two, that everybody was negative. We need a daily or semi-daily or once every 2 days, whatever it is, update of those sorts of things. I'm not talking about because I need to know if, you know, I don't know, Howie Kendrick has COVID or not. I need to know for the health and safety of the Nationals, and they need to know that. This needs to be as secure as possible, and it wasn't, and Mike Rizzo was right to call it out.
Well, so far, Major League Baseball is overpromised and underdelivered, period. There's no other way to look at this.
Yeah.
They said that they would have these tests more frequently than they've been able to, and they said the test results would come back faster. Neither of the things are up to the par that they had promised. So no problem with Mike Rizzo or the Nationals yesterday or any of the players who have been really upset and come out and said that they're nervous or that they are worried. But it's clear to me that what happened, Danny, and you tell me if you agree with this, I think baseball, and I mean both Major League Baseball and the Players Association, I'm saying the Royal Baseball as an industry, okay, they spent so much time fighting over the CBA to try to get the 60-game schedule in place, the financial element of playing, the term that was thrown around like it was, you know, the word and, pro rata. We heard so much about what percentage of the money is going to go to the players and to the owners and what's the number of games going to be. They fought for weeks about that when the other sports were spending that time processing and finding their bubble and their plan and how they're going to get players to and from the hub cities in the NHL. Baseball had that 60-whatever-page document that came out about no spitting and you're wearing masks while you're, you know, practicing and all these things. And all the players kind of laughed at it and it spoke publicly and said, oh, yeah, I'm sure we won't spit anymore or won't high-five. And then we never talked about it again. We just talked about money for 3 months. Uh-huh. And then at the end of that, I kept saying to my buddy, who I've referenced a lot on the show, Kyle Gibson, who pitches for the Rangers, I kept saying to him, I'm like, hey, man, aren't we going to have another huge fight over all of the safety stuff? He's like, oh, no, that'll be real easy. I'm like, why will that be easy? That's the hard part. You guys fought over the money thing. Look at these other sports that have spent months trying to figure out something that it seemed to me like baseball just kind of agreed upon in a few hours after the fact. Oh, yeah, no problem. We'll figure out the testing stuff. They focused on the wrong thing.
No, this will be easy. You know, because when governors, when mayors, when the president, when high-ranking government officials need public health advice, they turn to Rob Manfred. They turn to Major League Baseball because they're a public health organization. Oh, wait, no, they're not. They're a bunch of guys trying to put a game on that have no idea how to basically do that at this point. This should have been priority 1, 2, and 3, but it wasn't, as you correctly pointed out. And, the players, I understand what they were fighting. I think the players were put in a corner, and they were fighting for their rights and their money and their, you know, their livelihoods and trying to take care of each other. That's what unions are supposed to do in the face of, you know, mounting pressure from the owners to, you know, try to run out the shot clock or, you know, try to gain leverage advantages for the following year. This, to me, is what baseball at writ large, a.k.a. Rob Manfred and company, should have been emphasizing from Jump Street. The instant Rudy Gobert tested positive and spring trainings were shut down, like, I mean, you know, like every domino fell when you and I were down there interviewing the fence outside of the Nationals clubhouse. What should have happened right then was, okay, what protocols do we need? How do we get it? What's our best practice? Had they done all of that, Grant, dotted every I, crossed every T, and done everything they possibly could, and still they were in this position, it's forgivable. It is. This way this happened is not forgivable because of what they spent the last 4 months doing.
Yeah, it makes it that much more embarrassing and frustrating. Chris Bryant, who's one of the better players in baseball with the Chicago Cubs, he's won an MVP award. He has been an all-star in each of the last three seasons in Major League Baseball, kind of a mainstay at the all-star game at this point. Chris Bryant yesterday saying he does not feel safe. Listen to this.
What we agreed to was testing, you know, every other day. And we have had guys here that showed up on Sunday and hadn't gotten tested again, you know, 7 days later, you know. And then you don't get the results for 2 days either. So that's, you know, 9 days without knowing. And I think if we really want this to succeed, you know, we're going to have to figure that out, you know. And I wanted to play this year because I felt that it would be safe and I would feel comfortable. But honestly, I don't really feel that way, which is why I'm trying to keep my distance from everybody and wear my mask and just so that we can get this thing going.
That is Chris Bryant of the Chicago Cubs. You got players that want to play. They're saying, help me help you. But all you need to do is just make sure they get tested like you said they would and give them the proper timeline. By the way, within the last hour here, this is via Jesse Docherty, so we have the report from Rizzo that everyone on the team, the staffers and the players, tested negative for COVID-19. Juan Soto is not in team drills, according to Docherty of the Washington Post. He has been told that Soto has come into contact with a teammate who tested positive for coronavirus, and so he is currently isolating away from Nationals Park. Dave Martinez has said there were some added complications with those who traveled from out of the country for summer training. Soto came from his native Dominican Republic, as did a handful of the other Nationals. So that's conflicting because, you know, if we're hearing via Zuckerman that Rizzo's saying that the yesterday's tests were all negative, or the tests they got back, I guess, last night were all negative. I don't know if that means that one of the guys that he was with in the DR or traveled with may have tested positive at some point that's separate from the players that are training with the Nationals. But I guess they are having him right now quarantine or separate himself. Now, here's my question to that, Danny. Is that a two-week situation that now puts his opening day in jeopardy? Or does that mean he just gets separated and tested until, you know, if they find out he's negative, then he just gets to go right back and rejoin the team in a couple days?
You're asking a good question. I don't know the answer.
That's possible, right?
Yeah. I mean, so the Zuckerman tweet is there are four players that we haven't seen yet: Soto, Robles, Kendrick, and Castro. Rizzo said that in addition to the two unnamed players who tested positive for COVID-19, others who came into contact with them were required to quarantine and go through another test waiting results. So that would lead me to believe that you may not have it. We're going to test you one more time, and if you don't have it, you can come back to us. But you came into contact with somebody, so we're taking the precaution, smart, by the way, of separating you just in case, you know, just so we don't have a spreader event.
So the July 3rd tests have been processed and all came back negative. So the two positive tests were from before that then that they now found out about?
Must have been from before that, because if the July 3rd tests are all clear, then that's who was tested on July 3rd. Two right. unnamed nationals must have tested positive previously and have not been to the park yet.
Got you. And because these guys were around those players, then you separate them and they have to probably pass X amount of tests before they're able to go back. So then that means Howie Kendrick, Starlin Castro, and Juan Soto, among others, maybe Luis Garcia, are all in isolation until they can be deemed able to rejoin the team, which I would imagine is not a multiple-week thing, but probably, as you said, like that multi-test situation. What a weird, weird time this is. I mean, just so crazy. And in the baseball season, by the way, 2 weeks away, essentially. Six days from now, the Nats are going to be playing the Yankees. Grant and Danny with you on 106.7 The Fan. So people are asking on Twitter, welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan, and the people that are asking on Twitter whether or not I'm still on the Dying Comrex, the answer is yes, I am. At 12:35, show two, halfway through. Pretty amazing. Yesterday in the first half of our show, Danny, I was down to essentially being low on fuel. And I'm driving along right now just waiting for the engine to start sputtering. And I'm just keep driving. I haven't stopped yet. There is no remarkable explanation for what this battery is doing right now.
I can't figure it out. I'm glad it's happening. What's the mail status? Like I thought we were looking at the 11 o'clock hour for the arrival of the Josh Brolin cable.
Yes, the original note that we got from Tom Shedlick, the engineer, was that it would be here before showtime at 10 a.m. last night. Then he found out in the evening that it was a p.m. delivery, so he was hoping around noon. No sign yet, but p.m. goes till 11:59, so I don't really know how confident he is in that noon part of p.m. I know that the first minute of p.m. is 12 o'clock, but I'm not sure that that's exactly when this thing was expected to come. So it has changed already once, so we're not sure. But we've got the backup plan of this weird app on my phone that supposedly we'll be able to pull off. But right now we're down to about an hour and 23 minutes of this marathon remaining, Danny. And the question is, will we hear John Thompson show theme music? Or will this machine somehow give us a second straight broadcast, which would just be one of the all-time upsets? It's right there with Buster Douglas. It's UVA's game and then the tourney.
UMBC, yeah,
George Mason's Final Four run. One of the great upsets in sports history would be a second straight show pulled off by this Comrex, if it can do
it. It is remarkable. It is remarkable because it was, I mean, people need to understand, it was in the red. I'm not talking about a race car in the red like in Pulp Fiction. I'm talking about the tiniest percentage of that little battery symbol was red, and that was it. There was no other lights in that battery, basically meaning, dude, this is dire. This is at its end. And the idea that, I mean, it may conk out during the sentence as I'm talking right now, and it would still be remarkable. If nothing else happens, it's remarkable that not only finished yesterday's show, but you're now through whatever 2.5 is out of 4. What's that, like 60-some percent of the show is over, and you're still on that same battery. Unfathomable to me.
It's nuts. Now, I've got some clues saying that this thing is starting to peter a bit, right? I've got a little interferences here and there, some things happening. So we'll see what happens, okay? We're going to do this together. But for right now, we are chopping wood and chugging along. Yesterday, you and I mentioned this on the show. I think I got more tweets on this after the show than anything else, so I wanted to bring it back up. Mm-hmm. And that was, we just kind of stumbled into this discussion about the Redskins' colors, the burgundy and gold theme with this team. The name is going to be changed, it looks like. We could continue to debate whether it should. We can have the conversation of when it's going to happen. But I personally think it won't be until next football season. If this year goes off as normal in September, there's not enough time between now and training camp 3 weeks from now to figure all this out. So they'll have one last year as the Redskins, and then they'll be whatever they're going to be after that. But when you change the name, you change the logo. You hear people that say, you got to go all the way with this thing. Our guest yesterday, Rick Snyder, among other people, said, if you keep the burgundy and gold, then everyone's just going to be upset. I don't buy that. I think you can appease people that don't want to make a change. I think people like me who are perfectly happy changing the name would still dig the burgundy and gold look because it feels like the team that I grew up rooting for. And it's not like rooting for an almost entirely different team. You were conflicted yesterday. Have you given it more thought?
Yeah, I have. And I operate by several axioms. And what I mean is I have general governing principles in my life and how I evaluate sports. For example, a general governing principle. You shouldn't draft a running back in the top 10. That's generally how I feel. Are there exceptions? Sure. But it's a very rare exception for me, for the most part, right? You shouldn't overpay certain positions, or you shouldn't give 10-year deals to guys that are 30 years old. General axioms of how I operate. One of my axioms is uniforms are fine. Stop changing uniforms. When uniforms work, when they're good, when there are no issues, if it's a bad uniform, let's have a conversation. When uniforms are lovely, like the Washington Redskins uniforms are, they have excellent uniforms, please don't change those uniforms. Changing colors would then precipitate a changing of the uniform. I don't want to do some sort of futuristic Arena League looking thing that's very busy and looks like a color rush game or looks like Maryland's 17th alternate jersey. No interest in that. The uniforms are lovely. So therefore, let's keep the uniforms, which means keep the colors. Give me that burgundy and gold. I'm now way more strongly on this than I was yesterday. I really believe they should keep their colors to at least a nod to the folks that kind of lament a loss of some of their childhood and their memories and some of the joy. But B, uniforms are fine. Stop changing uniforms.
Yeah, you know I'm team keep the burgundy and gold. But the other side of this, if I could play it for a second, devil's advocate style, would be you've got the red, white, and blue theme in this city with our other teams, mm-hmm. right? So the Wizards having gone back to the more traditional Bullets look, which is fire. It's so such a good look, so much better than whatever that teal weird Wizards thing was that we were doing
so
for a
terrible.
While. You've got the Caps, and I know that traditionally they wear their red sweaters at home, they're white on the road, so there's not a lot of red, white, and blue to them, but you know they wear the navy blue shorts, so to speak, with the pads, you know, in the hockey gear. And you've seen their red, white, and blue alternates that I think they should wear more that are amazing with the stars on the top of Capitals and on the sleeves, which is just a really, really good look. I wish they wore those all the time, but I understand that, you know, the Rock the Red era has a theme and they stick with it. But you've got something that is comparable to the other teams. And then the Nationals, they've got a navy blue that's a red, white, and blue. They've got their red and their white. But the colors look very similar for everyone. You know, when the Valor in the Arena League, I know you referenced not wanting to do the AFL thing, but they had a really neat looking navy blue and red jersey. The Washington football team for the XFL was the DC Defenders at Audi Field. They had red on white, basically. Everything matches but the Redskins, and that's not necessarily a reason that it must be done, but I've heard, you know, our guy Luke Rossert, who you coached in baseball at one point in time, who was on MSNBC for years, who listens to the show, he was tweeting me saying, we should be doing what Pittsburgh does, where everyone's in black and gold. You know, we have an opportunity now to kind of uniform this thing in the city. Now, he's not a Redskins fan, in fairness. He's a big Buffalo Bills fan, so maybe it disqualifies his take. But you get my point.
No, of course I do.
If you have all the teams but one wearing certain colors, this could be a chance to get everybody in one boat, which would be neat. Obviously, I'm voting against that with burgundy and gold, but I definitely understand the logic. And I think that it would be cool if that were the case. I'm just not willing to give up this part of the Redskins' history because this is the part, I think, that can link the present to the past.
So I've got that. And again, I think anytime you're going to change to a name that's going to be disappointing to a lot of people, because that's what's going to happen. You're going to find something safe. You're going to find something that makes people, frankly, that aren't your fans happy. That's who you're looking to sort of satiate here with this name change in a lot of ways so that you stop getting criticized. We're in for one of those super futuristic, you know, glossy, creamsicle, color rush bits of nonsense, and there's no reason to do that. The Redskins have awesome uniforms. Great uniforms. They do. It's unique. There are not many uniforms on this planet that feature that color combination, and it works. So you get tradition. You get history. You get sort of a link to the past. Shout out Zelda. And you get all the different things that that make you know some of your hardcore fans happy, the few that are left, and there's no need for a redesign that's necessarily going to disappoint people.
Tom says, how do you keep the burgundy and gold if you're going to call them the Red Tails? And nobody says they're going to call them the Red Tails, but the point is you've heard Let's Red Wolves or Red Hogs. There's a lot of red something. Can you keep burgundy and gold? It's a really good point. Another guy here says, name change tolerable, change colors absolutely not. I wonder if anybody feels that way. You can call us at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. If they change the name and the logo, which seems like it's happening, should they also change the team colors? We want your calls, your thoughts on that. We'll hit the phones next. We are expecting the Redskins to change their name, and they will obviously be changing their logo. What about their colors? Do you have a preference? If they change their name and their logo, should they go with a full, clean slate and do something that works with the name and the logo, or would you prefer that they stick with the burgundy and gold? And maybe that means, Danny, that you whittle down some of the name options because you need something that does work with burgundy and gold. If that rules out Red Tails or Red Wolves or Red Hogs because there's not red in the jersey, it's burgundy and it's gold, maybe a lot of people feel like, well, that's too bad for those names, but it's got to be something that works with the colors. Because I do believe, I think there are fans who are perfectly understanding of the fact that the name could or should be changed, and they're going to endorse the change and be fine with it, and the logo as well. But they really want to see some type of respect paid to this organization over the years. I think it'll just cushion the blow for a lot of people. Like, we can have this conversation as if we're all robots and emotions aren't involved here, and, you know, we can say that this is right versus wrong and good versus evil if we really want to oversimplify this and take context and nuance out of the conversation. Or we can use some common sense and be human beings and have a little humility here and say, you know what? This is going to be tough for a lot of decent people. It is. And if the colors stay the same, maybe it makes it a little bit
softens the
difficult.
Blow. Yeah. And again, it's, you know, I know it's in vogue and fashionable to not consider those people, but again, at the end of the day, the Washington Redskins, or and then whatever they're going to be called, are a business, and they need fans. They need to try to make their customers happy. You try to make as many customers happy as you possibly can. And I think it's a thoughtful consideration. Like, if the only thing you care about is changing the name and you get it changed, you're going to be happy. If somebody wants to hold on to some of their wonderful memories of this team from when they were kids and having the same uniforms allows them to do that to some degree, they should be considered too when you kind of, you know, when you're making a drastic franchise-altering business branding decision like stands in front of the Redskins at this point, right? When it's Dan Snyder and Ron Rivera, a guy that's been here for, you know, 6 months, and they're making this choice that's gonna affect the franchise for the next 90-plus years or so, presumably. That's how long it was, when this one was called what it was. But for me, the as little change as possible when you're making big sweeping change might be a smart thing here. Incremental, because this is a violent shove forward in terms of rebranding and changing what this organization has been. I would try to cushion the blow as much as I possibly could. Even if, you know, let's say they're called the Red Tails, I think you could still have burgundy and gold. I don't think you necessarily have to make a giant change there in that regard, because we all know why the name happened. And, you know, in 20, 30 years, we're going, why are they still burgundy and gold? Why is there no red in there? Well, then you could share the interesting story. I think that's okay.
I hadn't considered that. You know, I think Red Tails, Red Wolves, or whatever, you need the red. But, yeah, that makes sense. You could do that. And it provides a chance, as you said, to talk about the past, which is going to be important. John tweeted us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. I thought this was good. He says, look, if you're changing the name, you got to change the colors to match the D.C. teams, make everybody red, white, and blue. But listen to his logic. He says, the Redskins will always have a special place in our heart. Redskins are burgundy and gold. No other team name should get those colors. Love you guys. It's an interesting thought, too. Like, almost out of respect to the old way of doing things, you're not carrying over those colors. It's the opposite of what we're talking about, where we're saying this will cushion the impact of making all these dramatic changes. He's saying that the chapter's being closed.
Just do it right off like a Band-Aid, yeah.
Absolutely. You're moving on from this, and that's part of history, and if people are going to leave you because of it, okay, but the next team name doesn't get the burgundy and the gold. Let's go to the phones, 800-636-1067. The question is, if the logo and the name are changed, and it certainly looks like that's going to happen, what about the burgundy and gold colors that we've all so much loved and looked forward to seeing on the field on Sundays over the years? Larry in Fairfax, what's up? Thanks for the call. How are you doing?
Guys, how are you doing today?
Hey, buddy.
Great.
I'm with John. Change the whole thing. You can look in the history books and watch videotapes. You want to see the old uniforms and pay dedication to the Redskins. It's time to move on. It's literally time to move on. Have you been proud of wearing the colors for the last 20 years of dismal football? No. So what's the point now? Like, it's cool to have the memories from your childhood, but it is time to move on. Enjoy, guys.
Thank you, hold on. Before you jump, let me ask you this. Are you still there? Appreciate the phone call. Couldn't catch him. When he says it's time to move on, I think his point is to change the name, to change the logo,
change
to do what's right. Absolutely. But I would be curious to someone who feels this is a pejorative, this is a bad name, this is a logo we shouldn't have. When he says change the colors, there's certainly nothing about the colors that are offensive or a problem in any way.
No, but it's just this is your new beginning.
Yeah, I guess.
Words. Yeah, right? That's
the
thought for changing the colors means, yes, some people may not like it, but they'll get used to it because it's football, because it's Washington. It's time for a rebranding. It's time for a new beginning. They've been garbage for 30 years, 21 years of which Dan Snyder has owned the team. So try something new, you know, just rebrand yourself. Basically, wipe the slate clean here of the last three decades of ineptitude and terrible play.
I'll say that there are a lot of people that have enjoyed wearing those colors in that gear, though, for the last 20 years to kind of answer his rhetorical question. I mean, they've never won in my lifetime, and I've always taken great pride in going to games and rooting for this team. And I've always enjoyed being at the stadium and being in the mix on game day. And I think a lot of people would probably feel that way, most of them older than me, though, because when they put on that gear, they remember the Super Bowl parades and the championship games that gave them so much joy. I can tell you that if you fast forward 30 years from right now, I'm still going to feel good putting on a Nationals t-shirt because of what Juan Soto and Adam Eaton and Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg gave me. 28 years from now, I'm still going to feel unbelievable about wearing a Caps hoodie because of what Ovechkin and Backstrom accomplished a couple of years ago in Vegas. Let's get to more of these calls, and we'll knock out a bunch of them at the top of the hour next. Here's the question, guys. What about the colors, right? The name and the logo, it seems like, are changing. The big debate after that is going to be the look. Should this be a burgundy and gold team if they're not named the Redskins? You're listening to Grant and Dave.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.